Amanda Van Hyl here, and welcome to episode 32 of the Shine Sparkers podcast. I'm joined by Roy and Deadweight here, and there was a Nintendo Direct back on March 27th, which showed the second trailer for Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, and then also April 2nd unveiled the Switch 2, revealing Beyond as a next-gen upgrade, and I'm so excited to be talking about both of them. All right, so first off, let's talk about that Metroid Prime 4 Beyond trailer. Holy crap, that game looks beautiful. What do you guys think?
So I feel like this game looks like it was made for me specifically, because my favorite Metroid game of all time is Metroid Prime 2. And there just seems to be so much Metroid Prime 2 DNA in this, between like new aliens and a new planet. And it just seems to have a conflict with different sides going on with Psylux, as well as whatever this mystery is that we've not been told yet. So I'm personally really excited. I think it looks a bit dull, which is kind of what I was hoping for. I like my Metroid games to be quite like slow and in a bit more anticipation. So yeah, this is really shaping up. I'm really hyped.
I am too. I was so happy with the second trailer. I had a feeling we might see it in the first direct, which was last week. We're recording this one a couple of hours after the Switch 2 Direct on April 2nd for your frame of reference. I knew pretty much right away that it was Prime 4 even before they showed the logo. And I was really happy that after the Direct, they released the full Vyros theme onto the Japanese Metroid website, the official one. I'm very happy with how the game looks. The environment, I may have said already, I think it may surpass the Talon Overworld as my favorite jungle environment in Metroid Prime. The psychic abilities look really cool. I am curious how they're going to explain that, because psychic implies controlled with your mind. So is it an upgrade for the suit? Does it unlock something that's naturally in Samus? Is she naturally a psychic, or is there a neural transplant that she gets? Because if it's a neurotransplant, how do they explain her not having it after Prime 4? I'd be interested to see how they explain that.
So the jungle alone just looks so beautiful. I could feel just the humidity from the jungle just watching that trailer. And I'm also curious about the psychic abilities. My theory is that it's some kind of add-on that like attaches or something along those lines. I don't think it's going to be a full-on implant. I think it's like an add-on thing to her suit. And then the reason it's not there later is it like gets destroyed or something like that. That seems to make the most sense, because I can't imagine her all of a sudden just like, oh, by the way, you've got these psychic abilities. Here you go.
We have a tiny bit of insight into that, because we see a scan that mentions that the gem thing on the foreheads of Samus and a few of the statues is called a psychic moat. I actually hadn't heard the word moat before, but it kind of means like a piece of essence or something. So it seems to be tied to the planet, and it does seem to be attached to Samus in some way. But as you say, that's all we kind of know right now.
It's embedded into her forehead, the jewel thing.
And then we had that nice little surprise at the very end.
Yes, we did.
Oh, of course. I actually forgot for a second. Yeah, no, it's a new suit upgrade, and it looks amazing, actually. I really like the design of it.
Very sleek.
Very sleek. It reminds me a little bit of a couple of previous suit designs. It has that, like, PED suit thing of attaching much less mystical technology, you know, sort of much more hardware-looking metals onto Samus's existing like bright colorful 80s Chozo magic bird suit, but it also, the sort of patterns on the front, the dots kind of resemble the light suit a little bit, but I really like it, and I think it suits her new proportions really well, that seem to be made more realistic this time around.
Yeah, for once it doesn't pull her arms out of their sockets.
Yeah, I think we asked Leroy Strauss about this, and he said, her rig has two elbows on each of her arms, essentially, in order to keep the shape of the shoulders, but they've toned it down a bit, and it still looks like Samus. I really like the look of Samus in this game.
I have a theory that, assuming Tanabe has stuck to his vision from a decade ago, where he talked about a time-shifting mechanic, I imagine that the psychic abilities might tie into that somehow. My theory is that Viros might be in the past. Assuming the Federation research facility we saw in last year's trailer is on Viros, that could be set in the present, and something that happens during the invasion sends Samus to the past, and maybe she has to travel back and forth between the past and present slash future, or she goes to the future at some point and sees this is what happens if she doesn't stop Psylux. I think that could be a cool angle to explore. I do wonder how Psylux fits into all of this. Might he be in search of psychic abilities, or is there no connection and it's just an extra power that Samus can use? That's something I'd be interested to find out.
Yes, there's something interesting about all of the new information that came out, not just in the trailer, but also surrounding the trailer, is on the Japanese website, Psylux's backstory that we know was reiterated that it's a complete mystery, but he has a grudge against Samus and the Federation that we have yet to see explored in a Metroid game. And we do know that back in, we interviewed, was it Richard Verodi? If I remember correctly. And he said that he did write a backstory for Psylux that didn't make it into Hunters, obviously, because Hunters is not that kind of game. But he said that he believes it should be in the Metroid Bible somewhere. So they could retcon it, or maybe we really just have been sitting on Psylux's backstory for a good 20 years or so. Which, just a quick aside before I give my further impressions. I don't think there's any other villain in any media ever that started out as one of seven playable characters in a hero shooter spin-off of a spin-off on the DS, and then had a post-credit scene 2 years later, another post-credit scene 9 years later, and then is finally becoming an actual full villain 9 years later, and we still don't know anything about him. It's quite the story for Psylux. But it is one of the things that I'm most excited for with Prime 4, as I've actually gone on record saying with a former podcast guest we've had, the Orpheon, we stream Prime 2 together because it's our favorite Metroid game, and we're just saying, like, we just want Metroid to give us new things to explore. Because when we look back on sort of the more recent history of Metroid after the big boom in the 2000s, Other M was kind of Sakamoto's return to the series. So there's a lot of familiar elements from Super and Fusion. And then Samus Returns was more of an actual literal return. But then in order to do that, it kind of got rid of some of the more unique elements of Metroid 2, and it's a bit more of a homogenous Metroid game. And Metroid Dread had to wrap up the saga, so there's a lot of similar elements there. But this does mean that we've had a streak of Metroid games that have felt very like Metroid, 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 Chozo, Chozo, Chozo. And it's just felt like I'd just love to see some more new ideas. So bringing a niche character like Psylux back, putting us on a new planet, a single planet we can focus on that has a new alien species that have their own powers, it gives the opportunity for like more anticipation for like big exploration payoffs, because we don't know what's coming, which isn't something we can always say about every Metroid game, because some of them have been a bit more derivative of others. Kind of what Prime 2 did, because Prime 2 was kind of setting itself apart because it was on the same engine and didn't want to retread too much ground. And I was scared because we were doing a return to form that we'd do something a bit safer. But they look to be, it looks quite creative. I can't wait to see all the ideas they do with what they've set up. It seems to be a lot of potential they could do with the psychic powers for gameplay, story, and the rest of it, really.
I can't get past the fact that we've been waiting for a resolution to Psylux's arc for almost 20 years now.
It's wild.
God, I feel old.
If you want to feel older, when Psylux was first introduced as a character, I don't think I was even in school at that point.
Oh, so. God.
I might as well break out the prune juice at this point. My God.
Phazon.
Yes, Phazon juice or something like that.
I think Phazon would taste like prunes, yeah. For sure.
One of the more outlandish theories I've seen the Lamorne's head, some people think that it looks like Metroid Prime's core essence. So they've tried to come up with some connection between it and Prime. It looks more like an axolotl to me.
Yeah, I'm seeing more axolotl than essence than anything else.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to see Dr. Shrunk from Animal Crossing in Metroid.
It does look a bit like... Oh no, I can't unsee that now. Thanks, Roy.
You're welcome.
But yeah, the Lamorne in general, we've been given so little. Even the narration just says that Samus is stuck on the planet. She needs to solve a conflict within space and time in order to escape it. And they say that they have been waiting for her. She's some kind of chosen one, as is the case with every light, space, time-based being in the Metroid universe, I suppose.
She's also been the Chozo's chosen one.
Yeah, and she's the new champion of Aether in Metroid Prime 2. So,
yep,
quite the resume.
Oh, she could get a job doing basically anything.
All right, so I have my theory, and it's more of a practicality thing than anything else. So when did 3 come out? Like back, 20 years ago?
2007, so.
2007, yeah. I was in college back then. Oh my gosh. Okay, so nearly 20 years ago. And we only know like a little bit about Psylux anyways. We're on a brand new planet. We've got a brand new species. I think on a practicality move here, they're bringing Psylux back to appease the ongoing Metroid fans who have been like wanting to know about it. But at the same time, it's going to be a brand new story, which is going, we've got a whole new generation of Metroid fans that started with Dread.
Yes.
And I think they wanted to make it where it's something that stands alone. So Prime 4, I think, will be able to stand alone if you have not played the 3 prior games. But at the same time, for those who have played the prior games, it's something that will be enjoyed there and will resolve some problems that or questions that you may have been asking.
Yeah.
So I think all of it is based on just like, hey, we haven't done anything in a while. What's going to make the old fans happy? This. Okay, but the new fans aren't going to have any idea what's happening because they may have played 1. They've probably not played 2 or 3 because it hasn't been available since the Switch came out, really, because it was like, what, a GameCube? It was on the Wii U. So, I mean, that was, again, like almost 10 years ago.
Yeah. I'd say Psylux seems, based on very little info, he seems to be playing the same role as, again, Dark Samus in Prime 2, where he teased in a previous post-credit scene, but obviously that just one character isn't enough to create an entire Metroid world for you to explore. So therefore, that character ends up being a secondary antagonist or like sort of an auxiliary force in a wider conflict. And that seems to be the case. But then again, it could be that maybe his whole thing with the Federation leads into a planet to get really, really powerful technology. Maybe it's time travel related, as Tanami said in 2015. He wanted to do Psylux, and he wanted to do time travel on a single planet. And we seem to have most of those things. And Samus does come out of some kind of strange portal at the start, and the logo has a weird portal on it, so... It's looking like that could be it, but whether those Psylux and time travel are intertwined, who's to say? I just know that it sounds kind of scary to have such an unhinged character have access to such a powerful technology, especially after he had those nukes in Prime Hunters, the triangle bomb. I don't trust him.
Nope. I actually have another theory. Assuming there is a connection between Psylux and Vuros, what if we've been wrong? Most people think that Psylux is a human because the suit is humanoid. What if Psylux is Lamorne and the Federation was somehow responsible for the destruction of the Lamorne and so he hates them for that reason?
Oh, but then they call Samus the Chosen One, so how would she fit into that?
See, I had that theory and then it just got defeated with your sound logic, so damn it.
Well, maybe he could be an evil Lamorne, because we have now had evil Chozo with Iron Egg.
That's true.
So, but now, here's the thing, Roy. The Lamorne have 6 arms. So now I'm just imagining, what if the 2 spikes on Silex's shoulders are just little arms that haven't grown yet? They're just flailing around like a T-Rex.
Could be.
Could be. Could be. I don't think we did an impression on the initial trailer either, but It was really hype, actually. I know some people were worried that the game would be more action oriented, because Metroid has kind of been very action oriented for a while now. The slower style of Metroid has not been seen since before, like Corruption, really. Well, maybe in Corruption had a few moments of it, but it does seem to be just like the intro to like a hook, because everything we've seen since then in the last two directs seems to hark back to the more like Super Metroid, Metroid Prime, Metroid Prime 2 slower way of doing things, which is my personal preference. But that first trailer was really exciting. It left a really good impression. It showed scanning, the morph ball. The morph ball transitions look really clean as well, because yes. I know that that's something that the retro devs reported struggling to iterate on in each game to try and make it look as good for the player as possible. That initial trailer had me absolutely screaming, if you've seen my reaction to it.
Oh, yes.
Well, one of our questions that we want to answer is whether or not we think Ridley's going to be in it.
I don't think so. I feel like if they add him, it's going to be shoehorned in. I don't know that he would add anything. As nice as it would be to battle Ridley on, like, Switch and see what they could do with it. Story-wise, I don't see how it would work. I did have one theory, which would have aligned with the theory that some people have had, that maybe Psylocke is Samus's brother. If there was a segment in Prime 4 where she had a flashback of K2L, or a dream where she was fighting Ridley in a dream, then that could make sense and it would let you fight Ridley without shoehorning him into the narrative.
He's going to be in there somehow. I don't know how, but he's going to be it. Maybe Ridley has a kid and we fight Ridley Jr.
Well, here's the thing. This game seems, at least based on the first trailers, weird. I mean, let's all just address something right now, all right? Hope Nintendo's not listening, but the Metroid timeline's dates.
Oh, God, don't get me started on timelines.
The timeline is fine. It mainly makes sense, but the dates that they give out, like the 20X whatever, has always been very fluffy. But yes. They did give a date, and it is at the very least further in the future along from Prime 3. Prime 1, 2, 3 and Federation Force are all suggested to take place within 1 year, bless Samus, and that's fairly well sourced, but this is taking place several years after Federation Force said it took place in, and potentially therefore takes place after Super. And if it takes place after Super Metroid, then that's really interesting because, yeah, Ridley's dead, so he shouldn't really be around. But if they have the time travel aspect, maybe Samus...
About to say, if there's time travel, then anything's free game.
Yeah, she just gets sent back just for trauma and then dragged right back to where she was.
I mean, if time travel's involved, what's to say that Ridley can't time travel also?
Time traveling Ridley.
I mean, I've played enough Zelda games to know that once time travel is involved, all bets are off and timelines just exist all over the place.
I mean, Zelda at least does have a consistent enough timeline. Every game is made with the previous one in mind. The spin-offs is mainly where they have to make things up for them. Or like, not the spin-offs, but the smaller titles like Oracle games and things is where it gets a little fluffy. And you could argue kind of the same thing with Metroid. Metroid mainly makes sense, but we still have no idea whether Prime Hunters takes place before Prime 2 or after it.
It's between Prime 1 and 2.
I've heard it takes place after Prime 2.
No.
Because of the ship. The ship's a different look.
Well, I did ask, I think we asked Richard about that, and he just said it was artistic license.
Oh, okay, fair enough, yeah. Makes sense. I mean, I like the design more. Have I mentioned I like Prime 2? I quite like Prime 2. And that was a good game.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it once or twice.
I quite like Metroid, actually.
Imagine that.
Yeah, Metroid's pretty cool.
I should go on a podcast and talk about Metroid.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Do you know anyone, Roy?
Yeah, I know a guy.
Sick.
I know a couple of Metroid fans. I've played like one or two.
There's a couple? There's more than one?
You've said that people get really impressed whenever you say you're a Metroid fan.
It is. It's funny. It's like I mentioned, like, yeah, I play Zelda, I play Metroid. Like, oh, Metroid. I didn't know you were a woman of culture. That's basically how it always ends up when I mention Metroid.
if you play Zelda or Metroid, you are a serious gamer.
Yeah. I mean, Zelda's very wide appeal.
And I think that's why, is because it has such a wide appeal. And I mean, same with, like, you know, I play Persona and I play, like, all these trashy JRPGs that are primarily dating sims and I don't care. And then, you know, you mentioned Metroid, and then I guess because it has such a niche fan base.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because some games are trying to have, like, a broader appeal. Like, I think Zelda is very, like, comfort food fantasy.
Yes.
It's so easy to get into. I've played a ton of Zelda games, and I forget that I've played as many as I have just because of that. But, like, Metroid does have this prestige around it. At least Nintendo thinks so, because they say they don't like to make too many Metroid games because they don't want to ruin... There's a certain, like, principle with Metroid, I think they said. So they don't want to let down that that sort of, like, higher art or whatever. Which I make sense because, like, the appeal of Metroid is much more specific. You can't ask everyone, like, hey, please backtrack through the same level you just played for an item and have them, like, get it. And I think that's fine. Yeah, once again, my worry with Prime 4 is maybe they would scale back on those kinds of things. But no, they seem to be doubling down. It's like, well, you like Metroid Prime. In fact, that's actually something we probably should talk about, is the psychic abilities. Because the first thing I think I said it out loud on stream, I said, this is going to open up so many possibilities for puzzles and door opening. Just as the narrator was saying, let's open some doors with this thing. And that has been more what Prime is compared to, like, 2D Metroid. It's about this, like, instead of just explore a room for its own sake, it's explore a room for puzzles and keys and try to figure out how to get to the next room from here. And psychic abilities seem really geared for that in a way that makes just a lot of sense for Prime and immediately, like, clicked for me. So
now, do we think that the psychic abilities, is that going to be usable on everything, or is it only on certain things or certain things that have certain materials in them?
I'd say the latter, but I hope it's available on more things than we think.
Yeah.
It'll probably be woven throughout all facets of gameplay, platforming, puzzle solving, and combat. We have seen applications for puzzles and combat in the newest trailer. I'm sure there's a lot more to it than what we've seen.
Have you guys played the Lego games? Because it just hit me that I was trying to think, it reminded me of a mechanic, and it's the Lego Star Wars Force pull that became the Lego Harry Potter wand. Like Wingardium Leviosa that became the Lego Marvel psychic abilities, and each game they have this, like, some objects glow and you can pull them now, and it kind of reminded me a bit of that, but it does look a bit more involved, at least. I just don't know, was that me?
I have not played the Lego games, but I get what you're coming from.
Okay, cool.
I have played Lego games. I don't think I played those ones, but I get the general idea.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I saw some Metroid fans saying, I hope Samus can crush people's heads with it, which makes some sense. Maybe she could throw enemies around, because at least in Prime 3, they started to experiment with some more interactivity with the grapple lasso and the, what's the one I'm thinking of? The X-ray visor could, like, look inside people's heads, and then you could, like, hit their brain with an overbeam and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you think that they could maybe do things like that with the psychic powers?
I mean,
well, I don't know about crushing heads.
Because I feel like, you know, if it's to that point, then what's to stop Samus from just, like, force choking absolutely everybody when she goes through? Like, there would be no challenge in it. So some of the enemies might have some kind of, like, psychic blocking armor on them.
Maybe smaller enemies it's easy to do on.
Yeah, but, like, the major ones you can't really do anything like that with.
Yeah, like, maybe the way they balance that out is the smaller enemies come in hordes. So if you spend forever trying to choke the health out of someone, then that gives time for the other enemies to, like, aggro.
That's a good point, too. So one thing I wanted to talk about is how we think the mouse movement with the new Joy-Con 2 controllers, how we think that'll do with Prime 4. Because they were saying how it's intuitive control for Prime 4.
Well, for anybody who's played the original Primes with mouse and keyboard through extra legal means, I feel like they might be right at home, depending on how much a Joy-Con feels like controlling a mouse. I can't help but think, how easy is it going to be to scratch the surface of the Joy-Con by doing that, depending on what surface you use it on?
That's one of the things I think about also is like, how nasty are people's Joy-Cons going to get just from like, yeah.
Although they did say something about tilting the Joy-Con. So it does sound like in the Switch 2 trailer direct that they just did.
Right, because they're still going to have like the gyroscope in it.
Yeah. So I'm wondering like what if it's just like standard mouse technology or whether you can like hover it a little bit and it'll still work pretty well. I don't know. I don't know mice.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I hope it's optional because, like, I don't like playing that style. My hands shake too much, so I can't hold it steady.
Me neither.
Well, yeah, it's been an ongoing debate with the first Prime, because the first Prime, the knob that is the GameCube C-stick,
yeah,
wasn't really, like, designed for camera movement. So that game, pretty much everything you need is in direct eye line so that you don't have to move around too much. And then they added the motion controls from Prime 3 into the game, and it plays really well, and I loved it. I personally love playing the Prime trilogy with those. It's how I experienced it for the first time. And then when I jumped to Switch, I was like, oh man, I hope I don't miss them too much. But then Prime Remastered's different control schemes are pretty comfortable, actually. Just because a lot of them, they're doing more than Prime 1 was intended for you to have control over, so therefore it kind of covers everything that Prime 1 needed you to do. So if they design this game well enough, maybe any control scheme will be comfortable for it, and it's not expecting you to do anything that will involve lots of twitchy action that you might need a mouse for. But I didn't believe the mouse rumor until I realized, wait, Prime 4 exists and it's going to probably be a launch title. So therefore, yeah, I think the mouse makes a lot of sense for the Switch 2, and then I believed it, and then it became true. And it's honestly a really cool addition, and I think a lot of people are going to be happy with that, as you say, Roy.
Yeah.
I just like to sit in weird positions when I'm playing, so like, it's just practicality-wise wouldn't work for me.
Have you ever played Wii games that don't have motion control and you just end up like sitting in the I end up like splurged like a little blob on the sofa because my hands can be in two different positions, like one's behind my head, one's leaning on the side of the armrest.
Yeah.
I just think, like, what am I doing?
So the Switch 2 is launching on June 5th, and they still didn't say if Metroid Prime 4 is going to be a launch title, which I'm assuming it is not since they didn't say it was. When do we think it's going to come out, though?
I think the summer is a safe bet. They might even put it out in August, which is historically the month of Metroid. That's when a lot of them have come out, including its predecessor, Corruption.
Right, and we don't have like a big game coming out that month because Donkey Kong is what, July?
Yeah.
And late in the year is Pokemon Legends ZA. So it would make sense for August to be like a good Metroid time.
Yeah.
Like if they're trying to balance out the calendar, because the game, since the Switch itself comes out in June, so that's enough hype there. July, we get the Donkey Kong game. Later in the year, we get Pokemon Legends ZA, and we get the Imprisoning War, Age of Imprisonment for the Hyrule Warriors game. So that puts a pretty big gap there in like the August September timeframe.
Yeah, I think mine and everyone, a lot of other people's theories was that they were in the Switch's like Switch One's Swan Song Direct just last week. They didn't give a release date, so everyone thought, oh, it's going to be a launch, like a dual release launch title like Twilight Princess.
Right, that's what I was thinking also, since they were really vague on the time for that one.
Yeah, so maybe they'll just have to say like, oh, it's a launch title, that's why we didn't say it's release date, but it's coming with that. And they've not done that. And it was weird, because I thought it would be a Twilight Princess thing, you know, like you can play Metroid Prime 1 Switch 1 edition on the Switch 2 through backwards compatibility, like you could play Twilight Princess GameCube on the Wii through backwards compatibility, but they wanted to dual release it. But I guess the reason it didn't matter anyway is because the Switch 2 has a lot of not just backwards compatibility, but now has these like Switch 2 DX versions that they're doing, and these like you can put Switch 1 games in the Switch 2 and then pay a little extra to get your upgrades to them and things like this. So it's like a completely new dual release system for Nintendo, like system of doing things. I mean, so I guess it superannuates the need for like a dual release launch title like Breath of the Wild was, for example, that wasn't backwards compatible on Switch or anything.
All right. Anything else we want to add on to that?
Game looks good.
Yeah. Does look good. Switch 2 looks good. In the US, it's priced at like $450 for just the standard package itself. And then if you get it with Mario Kart World, then it's right at $500. When the Switch first came out back in 2017, it was back in March 2017, and it was $300. So gone up $200 in the course of 8 years. Has it seriously been 8 years? I swear, I feel like I was just standing in line a few days ago getting the launch day Switch, but yeah, it's been 8 years.
I feel much the same way. I remember explaining why the Prime 4 reveal in 2017 was a big deal to a girl that I'd been dating for a few weeks, and now we're married in a house with cats. So,
oh, you know, yay!
Time really does fly. Yeah. Yeah, the Switch 2 thing also, it was... The game looks really beautiful on Switch 2 with the upgrade, I have to say. And this has me a bit torn because I wasn't particular... The lineup for Switch 2 is quite niche at this point, so I didn't think I'd get it on launch. But it's going to be hard not playing that very beautiful rendition of Vuros that they've created. Which is funny because a lot of people were saying there's no way that the Prime 4 trailers that we saw before today could have been on Switch 1 because they looked so beautiful. But that's just because the team at Retro are incredible and know how to turn this 2017 tablet way push it way beyond its limits, as we saw with Metroid Prime Remastered, which used like lots of like level of detail swapping techniques and clever noise maps and things like that in order to get the most out of it. And they've done it once again with Prime 4. The Switch 1 version of Prime 4 looked really good, but the Switch 2 version really did impress me, and I'm a little torn because that would be a beautiful way to experience the game.
Yeah, because they were saying that the Switch 2 is going to be playable at 120 frames per second. It's going to have HD resolution support as well as 4K support for some games.
Yeah.
As long as you play it through the deck. And then the screen itself is a 1080p screen, and it's a bigger screen than, like, if you're playing it in handheld mode. I mean, it's still going to be a bigger screen than the Switch, but it's still going to be the same thickness.
Yeah, I can't think of another example of the whole performance. I know a lot of games do performance mode versus I forget what they call it, but you know, like a graphics mode.
Yeah.
And then they only announced it for Prime 4 here, and I don't think I can think of another Nintendo game that has done such a thing. 120 frames per second for a smoother experience, or a 60 frames per second but 4K resolution experience. I mean, either of those sounds really, really fun, honestly. It sounds really exciting to see.
Yep. And then they're also incorporating, I don't know if it's going to be incorporated with Prime 4, but the 3D sound that they were advertising for the Switch 2. So it'll give you like that surround sound feeling without it actually being surround sound.
And,
so that'll be kind of cool.
You can listen to that beautiful Vuros jungle theme that Roy mentioned at the very start with that beautiful surround, which, may I say, I think is already a top five Metroid theme for me. It is. It sounds like it's Kenji Yamamoto again, but we don't know at this point. And if so, it's one of his absolute best. I am in love with that theme, and I really hope the rest of the soundtrack is even just half as strong as that. Although the other themes we heard in the trailer were also really, really beautiful. Reminded me a bit of Hunters, and then another one reminded me of Prime 3. So either way, we're already seeing some highs of this game. Even if this Prime 4 ended up being a complete flop, there's definitely some positives that can't be taken away from it at this point.
All right, well, while we could probably spend all day analyzing the trailer and coming up with theory after theory after theory, let's go on ahead and go on into the mailbag. And last time we asked you guys, what is the coolest trick you can do when replaying a Metroid game? And here is what you all had to say. Well, on Blue Sky, it's Ray says, it's got to be early space jump in Prime 1 or early super missile with Mach Ball in super, or that really tricky jump in Dread to get grapple bombs early. That one at least doesn't feel so much like a glitch to me. A popular one a lot of people are mentioning is the Sector 4 Shine Spark. And Mew Tubek explains, honestly, I feel like the definitive answer here would be to replay Fusion and go for the Shine Spark trick in Sector 4. I don't think anything will ever top that fourth wall break, even though I know I will never do it because I'm not good at games like that. I'm always impressed at everybody's ability to do all that.
Yeah, what's your favorite trick, Amanda? What's the Metroid?
I can't do any tricks. I'm doing good. Like, I don't know. I have no trick abilities, but I like it when it's some that they can actually acknowledge. Like in Dread, there was the, what was it? I can't, I'm balancing five different things in my head right now. Sorry. was it the Kraid battle, I want to say, and there was the one sequence break where you could, like, go in his belly button or something.
I'd say that counts, and it was really fun.
Yes.
Yeah, that one's really cool because it's technically, it is a trick, but Nintendo's like, we know you're going to do this trick, so we're going to give you some cool little visuals here if you do the trick. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, definitely. Kraid in Dread is definitely a highlight of that game.
Yeah.
Yes.
You guys have any favorite tricks?
I mean, I enjoy watching them all. I've
yeah.
never been able to do most of them. To this day, I still have never pulled off a mock ball for either early Ice Beam or early Super Missiles in Super Metroid. I've tried, can't do it, but I can always go back and try.
I've just realized a very short story of mine that I'm very proud of, which was there's a fairly tricky but like quintessential trick in Super Metroid speedrunning where when Kraid rises out of the floor, he takes five damage from I think he needs 20, like five super missiles to die, and then the damage from a single one will make him start rising even higher, and then the whole room gets taken up and you end up platforming higher to reach him. But when he takes that five damage from the super missile, you can very quickly shoot four more into his mouth, and the timing's very tight. And I saw it in a speedrun once, and I remembered it, and then I was playing the game casually on Nintendo Switch Online with a single Joy-Con on its side, and I went, isn't there something you could do here that's like this? And then I just pressed some buttons, and I quick-killed him. And then I was telling another member of the team about this, and they were like, that's actually not easy to do, and you did it on a sideways controller based on memory.
That's amazing.
So I'd say that's my favorite just because of that story.
That's very impressive. Yeah,
thank you.
That's something you have over me, because I have seen that technique before. It is really cool, but again, I've never been able to do it myself.
Is this why I was let onto the team? That was the little X factor that got me over the edge.
Yeah, that was the rite of passage. We also have another rite of passage going back to this Sector 4 Shine Spark. You have to be able to pull that off in order to join the Shine Sparkers team, which would mean that none of us could work for Shine Sparkers, because as far as I know, none of us have ever done it.
Yeah, this is actually the fake podcast. This is Shin Spankers. Shine Sparkers is next door.
All right, let's see. Nachos the X-th, which I believe means 10th, says, TBH, not cool. No, I'm going to say it's cool because it's Metroid related. But I can do a pretty good job bomb hovering in ZM when I put my mind to it. I'd love to learn Mach Ball someday, though.
Yeah, I remember when I first played Zero Mission, I tried wall jumping and bomb hovering, and I was like, wow, this is weirdly easy. And then I just ended up doing lots of accidental sequence breaks because it was just so fun.
I got fairly decent at bomb hovering in Zero Mission. I was actually quite happy with myself in that one.
That's one of the easier ones to do.
Oh, thanks, Roy.
Yeah, don't discredit her. Come on.
Here I am, all happy that I was able to do something.
No, it's good because it's accessible.
Okay, fair.
And it's a gateway to then do the harder things like the Mach Ball.
The clever thing about Zero Mission is Metroid 1's very open, but then Metroid got a little bit more designed with time, and then Zero Mission kind of bridged the gap by saying, hey, we're going to lead you where to go, but there's some really, really easy speedrunning tricks you could do to do that original route by going and finding little secret tunnels and fighting Ridley first without even the long beam and all of this jazz.
Yeah, nice balance.
It is a nice balance.
Gary Morin 227 says it's got to be the Mach Ball from Super Metroid.
I didn't say it earlier because I was too embarrassed, but I've also not done the muck ball, and I have tried.
It is deceptively hard.
You know what I have done in Metroid? I once was messing around in Super, and I didn't get the Varia suit. I went into Norfair. I got quite far to a bubble room that didn't have the heat thing. And then I was like, shoot, I don't have enough health, and I don't have a way to heal in order to make the rest of this room. Wait, the crystal flash exists, and I did my first and only ever crystal flash to heal up and then do the rest of it to get the speed booster. That was a fun time.
Nice.
I've done the crystal flash once, and I was streaming it, and everybody had to tell me how to do it, and I was so excited when I finally did it.
They never brought that back. They need to.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think it's been speculated, or at least maybe it's come out a little bit, that Metroid Dread didn't have the longest development cycle for what it was trying to do. And if a 2D Metroid got a little bit more time in the oven, I'd love if they added some more of those like little extras on there. It was much easier to do in the 90s, you know, much easier to code and make graphics for it and everything. In fact, I think the Crystal Flash reuses some graphics from the death animation as well. But yeah, throwing in some little bonuses like that don't matter but give the game replayability, I think would be really appreciated to see more of in Metroid.
Yes.
All right. Well, while we are on mailbag, the mailbag question for next episode is, what do you guys think of the Metroid Prime 4 Beyond trailer? Was it beyond your expectations? Because it was mine.
All I can say is everybody play Prime 4, support the series. I think it's going to be amazing.
Get it launch day so that Nintendo will be like, oh, wow, there really are a bunch of Metroid fans out there.
Yeah. I hope people do enjoy it, because Dread was the most bombastic the series has ever been.
Dread was so good.
And Prime 3 was a bit more bombastic, but that was because it was also wrapping up the trilogy. You know, it had to be this big finale to one of the most legendary series of all times. And, you know, it was a bit different, so it's not always people's favorite. I know it is your favorite, Roy. But it looks like with Prime 4, they're not insecure about going back to a much quieter style that ultimately will probably review very well. But I really do encourage all those Dread fans. Like, it might be a different style, but just trust in Prime. If you haven't already, play Prime Remastered, and if you like that, then please play this one too.
Yep, I'm excited for the new generation of Metroid fans.
Yes.
All right, well, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Roy and Deadwake, thank you, of course, so much for being part of the podcast, and we'll see you next mission.
See you next mission.
See you next mission.
How do you guys want to be introduced, Roy and Deadwake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, cool.
I go by Dwight for short, if Dwight? That's relevant for, like, casual conversation.
Alrighty. Kind of just feel like joined by Roy and Deadweight, or Dwight, as the cool kids say.
It's I'm very already one... Oh, sorry.
I'm very happy with...
Go on.
Oh, by the way, you've got these psychic abilities. Here you go.
Yeah, we because have a... if...
Oh, sorry. As you say, that's all kind of know right now.
It's embedded into your nice forehead. Little,
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
She looks amazing.
Totally off topic. Were you guys able to hear my stomach growling?
No.
No.
Okay, good. I want to hear like your general impressions beyond what we were just talking about. So, Roy, what were some of your bullet points there?
I see what you did there.
Beyond.
Yeah. I think Faison would taste like prunes. Yeah, for sure.
When I did that food feature for Shine Sparkers a few years ago, one of the recipes was Faison Alfredo, which was just blue cheese butter.
That's cute.
She could get a job doing basically anything. Then again, the job market is broken and no one's getting hired, but that's a separate
conversation. I was going to avoid making that very... I was going to make that joke and avoided it.
But I didn't think anybody wanted to work anymore.
Yeah, this is actually the fake podcast. This is Shin Spankers. Shine Sparkers is next door.
See, I thought you were going to say the rite of passage is watching Eurovision.
Hey, I've enjoyed Eurovision.
I have too. That's why I thought it was a rite of passage, is like watching Eurovision together. Like, that's something I always enjoy doing with you guys.
The Shine Sparkers podcast is edited by Stefan Wells with music from Maserati. If you enjoyed what you heard, we hope you'll consider following us on our social media pages. We're on Twitter, Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. For the latest Metroid news, interviews, community features, and other exclusive content, visit our website at shinesparkers.net. See you next mission.